All right. Thank you very much, Dave Schwann. John Hanson in for Dean Richards here today. A short show. You heard Andy mention we got Hamp and OB coming up at 11, so just 2 hours today. But, boy, I'm blessed to have the A-team here with me today. Schwanny, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, good morning, John. Good to be with you today also. Andy's back. He has been absent here for a few weeks on the morning program, but of course,
I mean, he's been busy doing a lot of other
things.
That was a rude way to put that.
Yeah, a few things. Yeah.
He's been absent.
I've been negligent on the job, but what can I do, you know?
Just doing the mornings. Jeez, come on.
No biggie, right? Come on.
No, Andy, I was excited to hear you were going to be doing sports today, and you got Hamp and OB, and then you'll be in tomorrow morning, right? You're not taking.
I got a little stop at TV tonight too, so it'll be a little bleary eyed morning, but that's cool.
Andy, you gotta get some rest, my friend.
Yeah, rest is overrated.
I agree. I got the Hawks game tonight, yes, so who am I talking to? Who am I talking to? Oh, I don't know. You, by the way, I'm in for Dean here, and you guys will remember this, Andy and Schwanny, because I know you do the Tree Time event, which is going to be big. It's next week, and it'll be really exciting, all that jazz. But part of Dean's agreement with Tree Time is he has to go out there 8 days early and start checking every single light in all the Christmas trees.
Yep, he brings batteries.
Yeah, he brings the batteries, yep. He brings the testers, and some spare lights. So, Schwanny, that's what he's doing here.
So that explains why you're here, then.
Yeah, that's why I'm here, yeah. He's
conducting inspection.
Yeah, he's been out there. He's done 26 hours straight already since he left WGN-TV. He'll take a break at some point, but he has to go pretty much 24/7 until the event a week from right now.
Yeah.
So
yeah, a week from now, right at this time is when we'll be getting underway.
He's got a tool belt ready with any bulb replacement that's needed,
local authorities have been alerted. Just in case.
Someone's wondering why there's a prowler at Tree Time at 3 in the morning.
Well, if he clips the wrong wire or something like that, too.
Yeah. No, that's a good call. Yeah, we'll let Lake Barrington and all those folks. In fact, we'll let all the Barringtons know.
Yes.
You guys know there's like 5 Barringtons, by the way?
Well, there's Barrington, Lake Barrington, a North Barrington or something like that also.
Barrington Hills, maybe? I just remember we did a Your Hometown. That's the first time I actually walked into Tree Time. It was blown away at just how into the Christmas spirit I was. It was 4 years ago. It was one of our first Year Hometowns we did. And we kind of did like an encapsulation of all the Barringtons. We just like lumped them all together. And I was kind of amazed there were so many. I'll look up that stat. You'd think I'd know that off the top of my head. But there's a couple Barringtons. And Dean's in all of them. He's actually going to check out all the Barringtons as well, just to make sure everything's fine. Later on this program, we're going to have our Northwestern doc in to answer a couple questions, including a interesting article about 90%. This headline, a little shocking, 90%. Of adults have a condition that nobody seems to have heard of. Okay, we'll find out about that. And there's some new regulations and guidelines for those of us that may be constipated. Speaking of moving things along, we'll take this break. We'll start the show next on WGN. 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. John Hanson in for Dean Richards. We'll take you till 11 o'clock here this morning. Dean is about 30,000 bulbs into his check of the Tree Time Christmas Creation store. He'll be checking every bulb right up until the moment he does the show there next week. I know people are really excited about that. And Schwanny, you'll be going up there, I'm assuming, too. Yeah, my friend?
I will be there. And you know what I'm looking forward to? I hope we do this. Last week, we were just kind of, you know, doing a little brainstorming on the air about, you know, things to do and entertainment and that sort of thing. And what would be fun for the audience there, not only, you know, the live audience, but the listeners as well. Mm-hmm. And we came up with an idea to do kind of a show and tell thing. Bring in obsolete items that, you know, were household items or regular items, so 50 years ago, maybe even 40 years ago, that are no longer in use.
You got an example of something you've got, Schwanny?
A rotary phone, for example.
Oh, a rotary phone.
Or how about a Sony Walkman?
A Walkman. I love that.
Yes.
Some people still listen on their Walkmans.
I know they do. Yeah. Well, every once in a while, you'll see someone with something like that.
Oh, we get texts from people that are mowing the lawn with their Walkman.
With their
Walkman. Seriously. I mean, that do stuff still, if it still works.
Yeah. I mean, if it still works, use it. Absolutely. But things like a rotary phone, I think I have one yet stored in a box somewhere. I'm going to have to go through the storage bin this week.
You know, this, I don't even think this would work anymore. Years ago, it's been 10 years since I started hosting on WGN in some capacity. A lot of that capacity in the first few years was overnight shifts.
Yes,
on the weekends, filling in for Plyer or whoever. And one night we did something where I said, I challenged the listener to call in from a payphone, any old payphone. This was like 2 a.m. And maybe it was a little earlier because some bars were still open. And we had a few callers get in there, a few listeners get in their car, go find like the payphone outside of the, I don't know, the Best Buy or something, see if it still works and call on in. And the way we were able to challenge it, I said, just put, you know, a quarter in. And we kept them on the line long enough for the call to end just to test it. That's how much time we had on the overnights 10 years or so ago.
Nothing to do.
Had a lot of time to fill, my friend.
You know, the last time I saw a payphone, I think was in L platform somewhere. You know, a red line stop or a brown line stop. There may have been one, but it's now been years. I don't think they're around anymore.
I don't think so.
I saw one at Midway.
Did it work?
I didn't check because I was afraid to touch it. It looked a little gross.
but they never were good.
It was right there, where you wait for rideshare. And there was a payphone. I'm thinking to myself, how many people don't have any idea what this thing is?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I mean, I think context clues are there, but maybe you're right, especially since we don't have the rotary phones that even really mimic what a payphone looks like. We actually auctioned one off at the Block Club Chicago party.
Really?
Someone donated an old payphone that I think it still worked. It was still in its like casing, not like the full foot to head vestibule that it would be in, but and someone, it went for a lot of money. So people really wanted one maybe in the basement. It was like a novelty or something.
Yeah. See, people of my generation will remember the Brady Bunch, and Mike Brady put in a payphone in the house. Because the kids were using the phone too much.
Ah, clever, clever.
And he, of course, had a big business deal that was going south because the payphone was in effect and they didn't have enough dimes. And it, I know you'll find this hard to believe, but the situation got rectified and it all ended happily.
Oh, in a Brady Bunch episode, it ended happily?
Yeah.
I thought it was going to end a little poorly there. I used a payphone at Downers Grove South High School. But instead of putting in and wasting a quarter, Andy and Dave Schwann, here's what we do. If we need our parents to pick us up, I'm sure you use this technique as well.
We
call 1-800-COLLECT, and they'd be like, all right, please record your name at the beep. And it'd go beep, and we go, please pick us up. We're at South right now. And then we'd be like, okay, we'll check. They'd call my parents, and then my parents would get a message. We have a collect call from, please pick me up. And then they'd come pick us up. Never have to pay.
It's the way to do it.
I had a friend that did something similar to that, and he mastered a technique of using the payphone at school to call his parents to either let him know that, you know, we were staying over because we had a longer rehearsal for a show we were in or something like that, or he was ready to be picked up. And, you know, how about this? This is how far back this goes. The phone call was a dime.
A dime.
A dime. 10 cents.
Got to save that dime, though, if you can.
And that was the whole point. You know, he'd put the dime in. His mom or dad or someone at home would answer the phone, and he'd yell, pick up, and hang up very quickly. And more often than not, he said he got his dime back.
Oh.
Or the real tricky one would be, I'm not going to be home. And then
so he would pay for the call. He would do it so quickly that it wouldn't register as a completed call.
That couple of seconds there made all the difference, you know.
Wow.
So he said he would get his dime back more often than not.
That's funny.
Boy, yeah.
Yeah, you could do no change. If you put a quarter in, even though the phone call was 10 cents, I don't think you got 15 cents back.
No,
you could use two nickels or a dime to make a phone call.
If anyone knows where there's a functioning payphone, that's a good story.
Yeah,
I'd like
let's
to
hear
find
from.
The last functioning payphone in the Chicagoland area. So the event is in Lake Barrington. I've gotten a few texts about the number of Barringtons that exist in the northwest suburbs. It's a few too many, in my personal opinion. There is, of course, Barrington. There's the village of Barrington. There's Port Barrington, which I didn't know existed. There's a Lake Barrington, of course. North Barrington, as you mentioned. And they're all within the same area, Gok.
Yeah.
I don't know. That deserves some consolidation, don't you think?
Well, isn't there a Round Lake and a Round Lake Beach?
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
We could do something. By 11 o'clock, I don't know if we'll be able to manage this, but we could reorganize some governments here and make things a little bit more efficient.
Be good.
If we had the whole show today, we'd get that done. If we had till 1 o'clock today. Well, we certainly don't. 312-981-7200 to join this conversation. What it is, I do not know, but you're welcome to hop on in. Bonus points, and you go straight to the front of the line if you call from a payphone. It's John for Dean next on WGN. 923 on WGN, 924 actually now. It's John Hansen in for Dean Richards. He's done 31,000 bulbs. He's checked over at Treetime Christmas Creations, but now he's looking for a twinkling incandescent color bulb. So I don't know if anyone's got one. He's going to be digging around the store. One of those was out on one of the trees. So if anyone near Lake Barrington or any of the other seven Barringtons I just listed wants to help him out, he could use the help there. Let's go to Rick on line one. Rick, you're on double. I was about to say, speaking of old things, I didn't mean it like that, Rick. But hello, Rick. You're on the air.
Well, you got it half right. I'm old. I'm an old telephone man, in fact.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It means I'm a retired telephone man. What do they call it now? Communications? I don't know. But, I never turned the radio down. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. You should go turn that down, though, for a second. We'll talk amongst ourselves for a moment. God, the telephone guy forgot to turn the radio down, guys. So, he's been retired probably a couple years. So.
Terms of slack, yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. I got a lot of questions about telephones, too. Rick, you back with us now, buddy?
I'm back. It gets worse than that. I am also an old radio guy.
Oh, no. Okay.
That ties right into the story.
So. We got a few of those here, too, Rick. So what do you got for me today?
I heard it on WGN radio in Chicago.
You better believe it.
So in high school, we had a ham radio club, and we called it the radio room. And out in the hallway on the other side of the wall was a payphone. Yes, it was rotary. And the wire came through the wall, through the radio room, and onto the phone room. Okay, this was before I was a phone man, but we were a little smarter than the average bear, so we figured out a payphone. You drop the coin in, it's ground start, they call it. Okay, so that just flipped the switch hook. Once it grounds, it trips it, you get the dial tone, and you can talk until you hang up.
Okay.
Switch hook, they call it. So we figured out, you open up the wire, and we just ground it real quick and get dial tone and, run right out there and pick up the handset and make our calls.
So you found a workaround even before you. Is that how you ended up being a phone guy?
I don't know if that's how. Probably not. But we did get in trouble because when they came to collect the coins one day, I noticed that there wasn't many in there. That something funky was going on, and they traced the wire, and they saw what we did.
Did you get in trouble for that, or did you get a pat on the head for being good students and clever?
Well, we kind of got in trouble from the principal, but our electronics teacher, who is also the guy in charge of the radio club, he gave us kind of a pat on the head and said, "That's pretty smart."
How long were you a telephone guy for?
Thompson.
Yeah.
Oh God, those were the good old days, man.
How long were you a
set switches?
Okay. How long were you a telephone guy for me, Rick? How long?
Oh, 35 years.
Any wild stories
I was with Central Telephone, Centel, we called it, I can't say the word, but sent to somewhere not heaven. And then I worked for 30-something years for a downtown, very famous hospital that I shall not name, but they had the psych ward, and I would be on repair, if to go out and fix the phone didn't work, it was shorted out, off hook, whatever. And they'd, want to take all your tools. I said, well, how am I going to work on the phone with no tools? So they'd have somebody stand there with you. We'd pull the cover off the phone, and $10 and quarters would fall out. So you got paid twice to fix the phone.
So you wouldn't be able to use the tools because you were in a psych ward. Like they didn't want you to lose them or someone to take one of them?
They didn't want somebody to grab a screwdriver and stab you. But I told them I have certain tools I will absolutely need to work on this. So they had to post like a guard standing there with me. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, that's wild. But you got a lot more like that.
Folks were dangerous to themselves and others, so it's...
No, that's good policy. I'm glad they thought of it. I just wonder how they came up with that policy if the last telephone guy wasn't so lucky. But I shouldn't joke about that, Rick. Thanks for the
might be the case.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the call, Rick. Have a good day. Okay.
The 80s, 70s, and 80s here, so that's a long time ago.
Not that long ago, Rick. Take care. That's Rick with his rotary phone, telephone, and radio guy. 312-981-7200. By the way, guys, I'm going to put you in charge of this, Andy Mazur, by the way.
Okay.
Don't let me forget before the end of the show to share my egg casserole recipe, okay?
Okay. Egg casserole.
Egg casserole, because, you know, Dean always shares a recipe. I figured I'd share that tradition as well. I shared my Danish recipe a couple weeks ago, which I made those yesterday. They are great. But egg casserole, I've come up with a real great recipe that is savory, and it's really easy to make. I think I prepped it in maybe 15 minutes. I got up a little early this morning, 6:15, before the sun was up, to get it all in there, get it in the oven so it'd be filling the house with the wafts of sage and great flavors. And then David got up, fed him with the morning sunlight, and then we went down. Enrique was up too by then, and we had some egg casserole. It was great. Nice. So I'm going to share that recipe with people on as well. It was a real perfect morning until David spit up all over me. But, you know, that's usually how the morning comes full ground. The sunlight was peeking through the window. And we were cuddling while I fed him the bottle. Everything was great. And then, blah, right all over me. But that's okay. That's the life of someone with
a... love the sound effect.
That was actually him. I brought him over for that. Had him, brought him to the station to make his little sound effects here today.
Authenticity, right?
That's what we, exactly. I wanted, good job, David. Nice work, buddy. Okay, there we go. All right, let's tell you what, Dave Schwann has got the news here on 720 WGN. All right, 9:33, and Schwann, I hope those pipes are still ready to go for our far-flung forecast.
We are ready to go, John. Yes, sirree.
And where are we going
today? I miss
today?
The music. I miss the music that we used to have on this, but...
I'm sorry. Well, I don't control copyright.
No, long story as to why. But yes, we are ready to go for it. And John, you'll be interested in this because this is American history far flung forecast day.
Okay.
It has nothing to do with presidents.
That's fine.
But nonetheless, very much American history because we're headed out east to Rome, New York. The city of Rome, New York. It's in the central portion of the state. And was the site of a Revolutionary War fort and a battlefield there, Fort Stanwix, which has been there since the 1700s. Rome was also the site of the first cheese factory in 1851.
It
was
now you've got me.
The first cheese factory in the United States. A gentleman by the name of Jesse Williams started that cheese factory. But we mention Rome because Rome, New York, was also the site of the beginning of the Erie Canal. They began work on the Erie Canal in 1817 there. And just a mere 8 years later, on this date, 200 years ago today, the Erie Canal was opened for traffic, connecting barges and moving goods and services from Albany, New York, all the way out to Lake Erie, over a 300-mile trip. And this just opened up everything. It changed everything for the country as goods and services could be moved from the East Coast out to the Great Lakes and into areas in and around the Midwest, cities like Detroit, and also a little port that was on the southeast or southwest portion of Lake Michigan that would later become a city called Chicago.
Whoa!
So the Erie Canal just changed everything. In that aspect. Rome, New York, though, was the site of the groundbreaking of it and eventually going from Albany on the Hudson River all the way out to Lake Erie.
So the bicentennial of the opening
today,
of the Erie Canal is
today.
And, Dave, I was going to make fun of you for a moment of just like, well, why aren't they? I can't believe it's not a bank holiday.
You were going to make fun. Go ahead. Everybody else makes fun.
Not make fun of you, Dave. I was going to just say, man, you are a wealth of just the most minute of details. But when you finish the story, of course, once you could connect New York to Lake Erie, you couldn't go through Lake Ontario because then you'd have to go through the falls.
No.
You've got to get to Lake Erie, which then winds you up through the Detroit Canal up to Huron, which then, of course, gets you to Superior in Michigan. And that's essentially the reason why we have Chicago today. Dave Schwann, you came through. What a good one.
Rome, New York. And how about this? Once they could move goods into the Great Lakes, Chicago being the connection point to what we know as the Chicago River, the Des Plaines River, the Illinois River, you're out to the Mississippi, and out to the world.
Wow. Wow, and it all started 200 years ago
200 years ago today. Rome, New York was the site of the groundbreaking, though, in 1817. They've got a nice day going. It's 41 degrees there today, sunny skies, and a high in the mid-50s, so more or less like what we have here.
For their bicentennial parade, are they going to have
one? I imagine they've got something going on, yes.
They should.
Now, there are, you know, the canal, as a, you know, a shipping line or a shipping area service has been discontinued, but they still use it for recreational use. Boats going up and down, you know, day trips and that sort of thing. Yeah, exactly, exactly, right.
Get your jet ski through the old Erie Canal.
You know, I've often thought of this. They build this Erie Canal. It is an amazing feat of engineering, as was the I&M Canal here in Illinois. And then the railroads come in. And wow. Now, and the railroads take over all the shipping.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, Dave Schwanee came through in a big way. Rome, New York, love that. Our far-flung forecast, and a good one as always. Let's take a break. We're going to talk Northwestern, and we're going to, with the doctors, a little bit about, constipation and something that adults are at risk for that most of us have never heard of. We'll do that next on WGN. 941 on WGN. Happy Sunday morning. John Hansen in for Dean Richards. We'll take it till 11 o'clock this morning. This Week in Health, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, and we say good morning. A happy Sunday morning to Dr. Michael Liu from Northwestern Medicine, Palos Hospital. Hello, Dr. Liu. How are you?
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm having a very wonderful fall morning.
Oh, I love to hear that. Yeah, crisp out there. The sun shining, though. The trees are in their full color change. Good day to be alive, my friend.
It's beautiful out there.
We love that. There's no great pivot to the conversation of constipation, but I'm going to go there, Dr. Liu, because I know it's what a lot of people deal with, and there's some new guidance, or at least just some new information, according to some studies, and I know we get new studies all the time that seem to offer sometimes contradictory information. But let's start with one thing that this study found, and that was that kiwi fruit can be cure is not the right word. A help for folks that are dealing with things that are a little bit backed up, huh?
Well, it's very interesting, actually. So kiwis have a variety of health benefits. You know, they're very nutritious in terms of nutriting vitamins. They're also very fibrous, meaning they contain a lot of fiber. And there's also certain items within the kiwi itself that actually may help improve your gut health as well. So it's really a great combination of all of those things.
And I imagine that, I mean, any vegetable or fruit is better than none, but this one seems to pack a certain punch here.
I think the takeaways here are that overall, fruits and vegetables are good for you and you know, healthy for you. And in this study specifically, they actually looked at people eating 2 to 3 kiwis per day, and some of those individuals did experience an improvement in their bowel habits.
Yeah, they were saying that the fiber in kiwi fruit actually swells when it's mixed with water, maybe more so than other fibers. And that the swelling, I imagine, helps make things bulk up a little bit, not to be too gross on a Sunday morning, but it's just the reality.
Absolutely. I think any time you're eating fiber, and this is the other key takeaway here, is whenever you're eating fiber, it's important to drink a lot of fluid so you stay hydrated. And that combination of the fiber and the fluid actually helps you to, you know, bulk up.
Yeah. I've also read that in the same study that it's a little contradictory, at least from what I've heard over time, is that a high fiber diet is often what's recommended just to keep you regular in all sorts of ways. But that, you know, you kind of get diminishing returns once you get to a certain point of fiber in your diet. And in fact, a high fiber diet may not be needed after all. I know we'll probably need more studies, and it's probably an individual, you know, each patient is going to be a little different, doctor. But I don't know. I found that a little surprising.
So I think this points to the general recommendations. They're the general recommendations, and they may not be applicable for, you know, you as an individual. And certainly in this situation, when you're dealing with constipation, eating a good amount of fiber is absolutely helpful for you. There's also other benefits of a high-fiber diet, including lowering your cholesterol. And actually, some people experience weight loss due to the feeling that they're feeling fuller as well. I think whenever we're dealing with this specific type of health issue, it's always important to consider you as an individual and working in partnership with your healthcare providers to help manage your healthcare needs.
Yeah, that's a great point, too, because constipation most likely is just that, and it's not necessarily something severe. But if there has been a change in your habits, I imagine don't just rush to the store, buy a bunch of high fiber, and never tell your doctor about it. Have a conversation with your doctor, because something like that, a change in your habits there could, I mean, I'm stressing the word could, I don't want to freak anyone out, but could indicate there's something else that's different that they'd want to follow up on, right?
Oh, absolutely, John. Whenever we look at this, a change in your bowel habits, it could be a variety of factors that contribute to that. But anytime you have those types of symptoms, I think it is important to tell your healthcare provider. And in that situation, we're better able to determine what's going on with you and, you know, help you resolve those problems that you're experiencing.
Right. I think a lot of people then immediately say, well, you're talking about colorectal cancer, which of course is something. And we've learned over the past years with our dear colleague, Mike Lowe, about the benefits of early detection and so many other folks that are dealing with that. But it could be like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Lou, but the gut-brain connection is so fascinating. It could be stress that is causing that. Maybe you need to chat with someone or be referred to someone to have a little sit-down sessions with. I mean, there's just so many things that can impact our gut that we're still learning about today that a healthcare provider can help nudge you in the right direction.
Absolutely, but I think there's a couple key takeaway principles here. Number one is, as a culture right now, we are actually fiber deficient, so increasing our fiber intake is very helpful for us. Number two, as a culture, we're also chronically dehydrated sometimes as well, so drinking a lot of fluids is very helpful for that aspect. And then number three, especially given this time of the year, you know, the weather's changing, you know, you got the Bears game on, for example, we have a habit of sitting and not staying active, but really, you know, want to encourage everybody to make sure that we're staying active and getting a good amount of physical activity in daily as well. And all of those things are very helpful and beneficial in terms of your gut health.
Well said. Dr. Lou, we're going to put you on hold here. We'll continue our segment in a moment, including the story of 9 in 10 U.S. adults have not heard of a health condition that affects 90% of people. 90% of people haven't heard of it, even though it affects 90% of us. We'll find out what that is next. John Ferdin, next on WGN. Sunday morning, everybody. Thank you for joining me. It's John Hansen in for the great Dean Richards. He'll be back in style next week with the live Treat Time broadcast. Hope you're going to head on up to Lake Barrington and check it out, too. This Week in Health, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. We continue our chat with Dr. Michael Liu. And, doctor, pretty shocking stats that there's 90% of us that don't know of a health condition that affects nearly 90% of us. First of all, how can that be? And second of all, what is it?
So number one, it does sound like a very large number, but I want us to really break it down and talk about it in some detail. So the cardiovascular kidney metabolic syndrome, it represents a cluster of issues that we are known as metabolic disorders. And essentially what that is, it's a combination of healthcare problems like high blood pressure, obesity, insulin resistance / diabetes, as well as high cholesterol combined with kidney issues. And it really represents an evolving way that we're managing these conditions. Previously, instead of managing these conditions separately, you know, here's your blood pressure issue, here's your diabetes issue, we're looking at it as a cluster of a whole. And it is true, the numbers are quite high. You know, a lot of us have these conditions or in combination with each other. And in that case, you know, certainly when it's that common, we can certainly raise some alarm.
So this is CKM syndrome, as you said, cardiovascular kidney metabolic syndrome. Whereas before we might know individually about some of these things, or we might say, well, you've got some cardiovascular issues here. Here's something with your kidney. Let's treat those things separately. This is more of a holistic view of how these systems all work together. Does that affect the treatment plans as well?
So absolutely. So it's important to think of the body as a machine, right? For example, John, look at your car. You know, your car's got an engine, it's got tires, you know, it's got certain fluids. And in this case, it all comes together as a whole. And really what we're seeing now is we have a variety of different medications that actually not just target one of these individual problems, can actually help to treat all of these problems as a whole. And certainly, if you look at what we're doing in terms of improving your overall cardiovascular health and improving your risk of illnesses such as, you know, cancer, diabetes, and also stroke, it's important to look at all of these things in combination.
CKM syndrome? Is this something that like a blood test will show you, or is this something that the doctor recognizes a few things that's going on in your body and can kind of diagnose you with it?
So I think the most important part of this is, you know your numbers, right? So know what your blood values are, know what your A1C is, know your cholesterol numbers, but also know what your blood pressure is as well, right? Know your numbers, know your weight, know your BMI. And that in combination with your discussion with your healthcare provider, that's going to be able to help you manage these conditions in the long term.
Yeah, well said. And that would, I imagine, be part of the yearly physical that we all need to be doing.
Absolutely. So I think of it as, taking your car to get an oil change, right? Every year, get a yearly physical, get the blood work that you need, know what your numbers are, and really, be able to advocate for yourself. How this works is we are all here to help you achieve your goals and to, help you manage these conditions overall. So I think in terms of your numbers, if you know that you have these conditions to begin with, the most important part is for us to put you on a good path where we reduce your risk factors so you don't develop the more severe complications down the line.
Well said. We've got about 2 minutes left. Want to chat about the COVID vaccines. Obviously, a lot of us have had them, maybe less so in the last couple of years as the virus has changed, of course. But an interesting new benefit perhaps for some folks that are going through cancer treatment right now, that the COVID vaccine has a surprise benefit for some of these folks?
Oh, this is incredibly exciting, and it really tells us what our technology is doing for us right now. And specifically, the study that they're looking at is they're looking at patients with a variety of skin and lung cancers. And what they found is when they were receiving the COVID vaccine in combination with immunotherapy, a lot of them had really good outcomes. I will say, though, this is still very early research. It's still kind of limited in that type of clinical setting. We don't know the full extent of these benefits yet, but it certainly is promising, and it shows us that we should continue to do this type of research and to continue to see how it can help improve the lives of our patients.
Is this something that they were just taking the vaccine because they were just, they're immunocompromised, they wanted the COVID vaccine, or is this like people that were taking the COVID vaccine to try and amp up their immune systems to fight these tumors? Or was this just kind of, they looked at the numbers and said, whoa, here's an interesting correlation?
So I think it's whenever you're immunocompromised, you are at risk factor for getting more severe COVID symptoms. So in those situations, it is sometimes beneficial for you to receive your COVID vaccine to prevent those issues. But what we're seeing with this study specifically is that the COVID vaccine actually helps to amplify their immune system in a way where they actually responded a little bit better to the immunotherapy.
Interesting. That's fascinating stuff. Just a good reminders all across the board, all three of these stories, to continue to check with your health providers, have open lines of communications, and hopefully stem off some of this stuff. This Week in Health, sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, Dr. Michael Liu, I appreciate your time. Go enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Go Bears.
Thank you, John. Go Bears.
And take care. News coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. All right. Thank you very much, Dave Schwann. John Hansen in for Dean Richards here just till 11 o'clock here today with Hamp and OB and Andy, too, doing that show. It's always exciting stuff, especially when the Bears are on a four-game winning streak.
Yeah,
that
nice,
feels
huh?
good, Andy.
Yeah. Beats the alternative, which we've been talking about the last 5, 6, 7 years.
I hate saying it like this, but we were 4-2 last year as well. I don't think it's last year. I'm not saying
no,
that.
No, it's not. The guys were asked about that a lot during the week up at House Hall and to a man, and I think they're all correct. There's a different feeling with this coaching staff compared to what they were being, led by the last couple of seasons. Be it as it may, some of those four games that they've won in a row have not been the most pretty works of art. But at the same time, they count as wins in the NFL. And at the same time, I firmly believe that a couple of years ago, those close games, they lose by 15.
Yeah, they're 0-6 at this point with some of the other
They lose those games because they're not put in a position to win.
No doubt. I agree 100%. I do not care how you win an NFL game against.
You just got to win.
There's like so much parity in the league that an 8-1 team against a 1-8 team, still an NFL football game.
Well, yeah.
Anyone can win that game.
Well, look at today, too. The Bears 4-2 and the Ravens are 1-5. But why are they 1-5? That's because, Lamar Jackson's been out the last two games. Now a third game in a row doesn't mean that they're not a quality NFL team. They were picked as a Super Bowl contender at the beginning of the year, and one injury after another has kind of decimated them. But this is a home team that is going to be playing with some pride because At 1-6, your chances of getting into the playoffs are pretty much gone.
Yeah.
1-5, you still have kind of that outside chance. Yeah. So it's a big game for them.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. And you talk about different vibes in locker rooms. How about the Blackhawks, man? Now, we're only 8 games in.
Love it. Love it.
But I love everything I'm seeing at the United Center and on the road, too. They're killing it. They're doing so well.
Yeah. I mean, you got a guy that came in, and Jeff Blashill, that not a lot of people knew about. He was in Detroit and had one playoff run for the Red Wings. But they were kind of in the same position that the Blackhawks were in, where they kind of broke everything down and tried to rebuild. And, you know, maybe their rebuild went a little quicker just because I don't know for what reason they ended up bringing in some extra free agent talent. And of course they got Alex DeBrincat, and they have Patrick Kane now and Dylan Larkin, and those guys are good. But I like the tone that Blashill set from the very beginning of this training camp, saying, look, it is not going to be a fun camp. We are going to work, and this is what we're here to do. And I really think that the younger guys have a little bit more of a confidence factor, knowing that they can go out and play their game. If it's within his structure, they have nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I agree. And you could tell. Like, it just looks a little different. Now we're 8 games in. I don't know where the season ends up.
You can't celebrate 8 games in, but you can celebrate the fact that, again, like the Bears, those close games last year, and I mean, you got to take the Utah game out of there because I think they got hosed in that game.
Yeah.
But you got to take that game out because, like last year, these close games, they were losing a lot of those games last year. Now they're finding ways to either get it into overtime and maybe, losing in the overtime or shootout, but they're getting it to the OT period, or they're winning it late in games, which is something that has happened to them numerous times over the last few years.
I'll just make this last point before we take the break. Get on the bus now, fans. If you've been off the bus, yes. I know a lot of fans have been on the bus the whole time.
Spencer Knight is driving the bus, by the way.
What's that?
Spencer Knight is driving the bus.
Yes, exactly. But get on now as a fan. Yeah. This is the year to learn all these names and be excited about it. Maybe we make the playoffs. More than likely, maybe we don't.
Yeah.
But get on now.
Better brand of hockey.
Exactly. Now is the time to get on board here, either at WGN or Boo. I want to see at the United Center as well. Okay. Thanks, Andy, for that. More coming up. We're going to check in after the 10:30 news with Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. I've got a recipe to give you, more thoughts on Barrington, and looks like Dean Richards is now bending all the hooks for the ornaments at Tree Time. He's pivoted from checking the lights to
what about
bending
tinsel, hanging tinsel?
He's doing
tree.
A little tinseling, too.
Okay.
He's working 24 hours a day up until the event next Sunday morning. We'll talk more about that. Some other things, too. Your phone calls and texts next on WGN. 720 WGN. John Hansen in for Dean Richards till 11 o'clock this morning. Hampton OB coming up next on a gorgeous Sunday in Chicago. Yeah, it's a little chilly out there, but boy, loving this sunshine here on a fine October day, the last Sunday in October, the last weekend day in the 10th month of the year, which is pretty unbelievable. We got a Friday Halloween this week. I don't know, Schwani, if you've got the costume ready. You a dress up for Halloween kind of guy or no?
Well, 60 years ago I was.
Never since then, Schwani?
Oh no, I've been to some adult Halloween parties. It's been a long time though, And I must confess, I'm not very original and creative with costumes. I don't know why, but you just end up going as, some kind of a weird goblin or something like that, but I just can't come up with any creative ideas.
I can't blame you, Schwani, and I don't know, Mazer, if you're dressing up, but years ago I was at a thrift store and found just this incredible coat and hat that looks and resembles like a Sherlock Holmes coat and hat, and I think I've been Sherlock Holmes like 8 times now because I love that coat. If you spin it, like, flares out.
Elementary.
Yes. And that was right when the Sherlock series was becoming popular, the one with Benedict Cumberbund or whatever his name is. And Dean would slap me for not knowing the exact name, by the way. Cumberbatch, I think. Anyways, oh my God, I've been Sherlock Holmes so many years. A few years ago, we had a Halloween game, I think, at the United Center. And my in-arena host, co-partner, Jenna Rose, really wanted to dress up. And I really didn't. But I was like, man, well, I'll throw on the Sherlock coat over a Blackhawks jersey. That'll work out fine.
Yeah, so. I have no originality because everybody says, well, that's what you dress anyway. I mean, I'll wear a football jersey or a hockey jersey or something like that. And like, well, that's not much of a stretch. I'm like, come on, I don't wear it every day.
Yeah, no, you don't. I don't see you in the jersey that often.
Exactly.
Now, I was with you a lot during the Cubs playoff when I was
right.
For
so I had that going, representing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. We have a costume picked out for David. I'm not going to tell you what it is now because I want to save it for the post. I want the internet points on Friday when we post that thing. Although I have no idea. Like, am I required to dress up then if I'm going around trick or treating with the kid? Is that
no, not necessarily. Okay. No.
Is that going to show a bad example? I mean, he's not going to remember it anyway. He's only 7 months old. But I feel like maybe something. Maybe give it a little. Maybe I'll put the Sherlock coat on.
There you go.
It's going to be chilly anyways.
Yeah, you can bundle him up in it in case it gets cold.
Yeah, now I got to crawl in the crawl space to figure out where the heck that thing is. But I was wondering, and maybe you two don't know the answer, but I'm sure someone out there does, because I looked this up. We're out in Downers Grove, as most people know. There is no, like, set hours for trick-or-treating. I think some towns and villages, like, kind of map it out for
people. Oh, yeah. And it's over before sunset.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not taking David at 10 o'clock. More wondering, do babies go first? Like, I mean, I think that some towns used to arrange it that way, where they'd be like, hey, maybe the younger and elementary kids at this time and this time and this time. Or maybe is it just a free-for-all, I guess?
Well,
I'm trying to think back to when I did it, and it was still light out when I would go.
Yeah, some of the neighborhoods do it, I think, the weekend before. They have, like, a Halloween parade, and the businesses that are on certain streets in those areas will... have candy for kids, and of course they'll have sales for the adults, so that's not stupid. But they'll do that in a concentrated area. They'll shut down the streets and, you know, let the kids kind of roam. And that way, you know, if the parents want to take them out on the day, you can take them out early because they've gotten a lot of candy, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, because also, like, I want some, like, Enrique and I are both going to go with David, of course. We want to experience his first trick-or-treating. Now, I also may be overthinking how many houses we're going to go to. I think it might last five before he's done with whatever the heck we're doing. I feel like we'll go to, like, my parents' house down the street. Maybe he'll come around for a couple. But then, like, what do I do at my house? Do I just leave a bowl out? Because I don't want to not participate then. All right, I'll just leave a bowl out when we go. And I feel like we can go, like, for, what, 3:30? Is that too early? 4?
Yeah, 4 o'clock.
I think 4 o'clock is reasonable, yeah.
Okay.
With a newborn, yes.
Yeah, 4 o'clock. I mean, it's really going to be up to David's schedule and his napping. We have learned very quickly that we have no control over anything anymore. So I don't even know why I'm planning any of this out. He may not want to get in the costume. I mean, he's a real easygoing kid, but you never know when he just goes, nope, that's not happening. Or he'll just spit up all over it a second in.
I may not have been very creative with costumes, but I can tell you, when I was a kid, Halloween was a big night in the neighborhood.
Oh, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I loved a trick-or-treat. I was lucky. My mom, who is, she's an artist. She was an art teacher for many years. She would make these incredible costumes to whatever I wanted to be. There was nothing store-bought in our family. Now, it was easy for a few years because my older brother wanted to be a firefighter every single year from age 5 until 15. So that costume was easy. My dad just brought home some of his equipment and threw it on.
Take care of that, yeah.
Yeah. But, I had some ideas. I mean, I'm thinking back. I was the Tin Man one year.
Oh, that's cool.
I had a big Wizard of Oz phase.
That's cool.
That should be no surprise. That was a harbinger of things to come. But I was really into the Tin Man, and it wasn't some store-bought thing. My mom would go to, like, probably Michael's or somewhere and buy a bunch of foam, and she made this whole Tin Man costume. I was, like, painted in all silver and gray, and she made, like, an axe out of, like, duct tape and all this cool stuff. I was a magician, I remember, one year, and she had this whole thing done, and she helped me out with. I was Indiana Jones one year. And then when I was, I think, probably third or fourth grade, I started a streak of being Harry Carey for 11 years.
Nice.
Oh, with the glasses and the whole bit?
The glasses. I had a microphone that said WGN on it. And I had what I thought was a stellar Harry Carey impression for a 10-year-old. And maybe I brought a can of Budweiser with. No, that probably wasn't allowed.
Probably wasn't
part of the costume. But I was so creative as a little kid. Then I was just like, Harry Carey, do that over and over and over again. One year it was the year Titanic came out. I took a break for being Harry Carey. I was the captain of the Titanic, but I was frozen as if I had been in the water for a while.
Oh.
And I'll never forget someone telling me that was a little too soon. And I was like, too soon? This was in 1998. That ship sank in 1912. I I know the guy died. I know that's not funny, but come on, a frozen Captain Smith, right? You said 20?
Captain Smith.
Captain Smith. That was totally fine. The 6-3-0 just texted in, by the way. John, I was so excited like you to take my young one out at 3:30 to 4, but no one was ready. People were still at work. It was very sad. Okay. Well, maybe I'll just ask the neighbors. I'll go door to door the day before. I'll do a test run, guys, and I'll see how that goes, make sure they're all ready for me the next day.
Give us a report next week at Tree Time.
I will. Yes. Yeah. I'll call on in. I'm sure Dean will put me to the front of the list. But someone said, leave out a bowl or turn off your lights or, trade off, with Enrique. You gotta go when folks are home. So
yeah,
someone's gotta
go. That's true. Yeah. There was a time, there was a house I remember in the neighborhood where for some reason no one was home, but they put a note on the door saying that you can get the tree to cross the street at such and such a neighbor's house. So you got, you know, kind of a daily double there.
Did they tell the neighbors they were doing that?
I assume
the neighbors said you got two for me.
I assumed they did, because you'd get, you know, the little, no, they didn't have the bite-sized candy bars yet. It was the full-size ones. You know, you'd get a Snickers and a Milky Way, or a pack of Good and Plenty and M&Ms.
Oh, look at that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fun trick to play on your neighbors that you don't like so much. Just be like, hey, he'll get you. Just tell him John sent you. 847 says, one year my son dressed up as Santa Claus for Halloween. He was the hit of the Halloween party.
That would be, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, there's some great ones. I'll have to think back to some other ones. I was, as a younger kid, blessed to have a mom who was so good at trying to put things together. And I can remember her ever saying no to an idea, which is pretty stellar, although maybe I've shielded those memories out. Getting a lot of texts from people that have set hours. Western Springs is 3 to 8 p.m. DeKalb's hours are 4 to 7. Yeah, I looked at Downers Grove's website, and they say that they don't have set hours, but I think generally speaking, around 4 or 4:30, I'll be fine. Tell you what, let's take this break. We'll have a little bit more before the 10:30 news. We'll have Blockbuster Blake Stubbs in for a little report. We'll do that all next. John Ferdine on WGN. 720 WGN, John Hanson in for Dean Richards. Just till 11 o'clock, we got Hamp and OB coming up. Looking forward to their breakdown of the Bears game, leading into the game against Baltimore. 312-981-7200 is the phone number to drop a line, have a conversation, join on in. We were talking about some trick-or-treating stuff. And just one quick aside, Schwani. You know how I like to read old newspapers. I'm sure listeners are sick of me talking about the newspapers from 100 years ago. Well, some of them. I think some people also like to dive in like we do. And, I mean, no joke, I could stay up all night and read one story leads to me having to find another one to another one. But I just got a note, in 1925 in the Tribune in October, there is a real steep ramp up. So this is 100 years ago. And one of the big debates during the time, Schwani, you can probably guess, is prohibition.
Oh, totally.
And as of 25 is when the real crime in Chicago starts to ramp up. And I got to say, it is fascinating. Page 8 of the Tribune back in the day was the voice of the people and the letters to the editor. Something I don't even know if the Trib still does it. I'm sure there are some letters published. I don't know. But I read those, and by 1925, which is only 5 years into Prohibition and 8 years still left to go, this debate was splitting people, and it was raucous in Chicago at that time. I mean, it's really unreal. The
Prohibition
crime
and crime. Yeah. Oh, I mean,
because, you know, I think the first couple of years of Prohibition, people were upset, but, you know, that they couldn't have their drink or that they had to do it. But the lawlessness of Prohibition did not take that long to step on in. And there's a lot of stories from people that were even teetotalers or dry folks saying this is not working. And I'm just fascinated to find out. It's still going to take 8 more years at this point for them to get rid of it. I don't know. I just love reading the original sources. You know, we tend to like wash over history as like, oh yeah, Prohibition, 13 years, without really thinking of the effect it had on everyday people.
That's right. Exactly. It did. And by the way, we're getting into news time here, but if you want to continue this conversation, You're a little bit young to have known about the microfilm department over at the Chicago Public Library.
I did microfilm in college.
Oh, you did, Mr. Schwann?
Yes, that's all we had was.
Yeah.
And I would spend Saturday nights looking at old newspapers. I was a real popular kid. Reading microfilm at the University of Illinois Library.
Wasn't it great?
It was awesome. I mean, the smell
what
of the reel
I
as you pull it out.
On microfilm is just amazing.
Oh, it's so cool. I did a lot of research on that.
Very quickly. You know what I found?
What's that?
I found the Chicago Tribune article reporting on the address at Gettysburg by President Lincoln.
Wow.
In November of 1863.
I'll tell you what, if you love, Shawnee, I got to get you an account maybe for your birthday. I know we just had it, so maybe next year. Newspapers.com, it's $20 a month, which might seem like a lot.
No, you pay for it.
I love it. You can see newspapers from all over the world from years going back. The earliest entry they have is from 1690 from Boston. It is incredible. So Shawnee, next year, remind me, I'm going to buy that for your birthday, okay?
Okay, deal.
10:31, time for Shawnee's News on WGN. All right, time for our entertainment and theater report, sponsored by the Lyric Opera of Chicago. And today we bring in Mr. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs. John Hanson in for Dean Richards here. Blake, you're over there. How you doing, buddy?
Doing well, sir. Up and at 'em this morning on Sunday. It's my last day of my personal vacation, so I'm going to do a little bit of resting. I might go catch a movie. We'll see what happens. You know,
that sounds young. Yeah, that's just up your alley, a movie there, and you do a lot of great stuff. You're based out of Peoria, you do theater down there, and you've been reviewing movies here on WGN for about 10 years on and off here, and we always appreciate you hopping on with us, just kind of giving us an entertainment look at things. And the big movie out this weekend was the Springsteen film, right?
Yes, Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, starring Jeremy Allen White, one of Chicago's favorite adopted sons, thanks to the show Shameless and The Bear. Also starring Jeremy Strong, who many audiences will know most recently probably from things like Succession. This movie was co-written by Warren Zanes, who wrote the book of the same title, Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, and the director, Scott Cooper. This is a biopic of sorts. It is a music biopic. I don't want to just say that and hear groans, but it is a music biopic that tries to change the formula up just a little bit from what we're used to.
What do you mean what we're used to? Like compared to like what, like a Rocket Man or things like that?
Yeah, like seeing as an artist's entire life, you know, put on camera, and it has to have a happy ending, and it has to have, you know, a few key beats, and it lives and dies off of musical performances. This particular film, though, focuses on a very key point in Springsteen's career, which was the 1982, the writing of the album Nebraska, which came out in 1982. If you aren't too familiar with that album, you are familiar with the music. And as somebody myself who was born after, you know, some of his greatest work was already out, to me, it's just all the music of Bruce Springsteen, the eras of the albums, and like how each one affected his personal life and how much his personal life influenced the writing of those albums. I don't have that personal picture. This particular film, I think, does paint a solid image of why Nebraska is one of his most personal albums. And also it delves deep into reconciling things from his past that, again, usually a music biopic tries to just show you the artist's whole life. This feels like this was something Springsteen wanted us to see, but it's very contained in what it tries to show us. And it also makes him what a lot of these types of movies don't do, which is it makes him feel very human, very mortal, very much, you know, leaving a strong legacy, even though the man still performs. This is something that I think fans of Springsteen will appreciate. They might have some issues with it just because of, you know, it's a movie. It's going to take some dramatic licensing here and there. But I think that the emotional pull of the film is very strong. Now, structurally, the film has a few issues that I think by the time you reach the third act, you feel like you're throwing out the script and doing your own thing. And again, it does not provide you the happiest of endings, which you kind of have to dig more into the music to realize who the boss is as a man. But this film does a great job through particularly the performance of Jeremy Allen White, who I believe was handpicked and signed off on by the boss himself to play him.
See, you're getting me in an area where I don't like, because this is why I didn't like Rocketman all that much. I was fine, whatever. But, like, just knowing that Elton John was, like, EP, the executive producer of it, just, like, yeah. And maybe that's unfair. Maybe he did let it be a complete look at his life, all the warts and all. And I know Bruce Springsteen may not be listed here, but was involved in the production of this. Yeah. It's just, like, as a viewer, I just go into the movie being like, well, this isn't going to be real. This is going to be what they want to show us. And it already colors my judgment from the moment I start watching a film like this.
So that was one of my biggest complaints about Bohemian Rhapsody. As much as I love Queen, I felt like the movie was more about painting a positive light on everything, when in truth, you know, it played with timelines. It played with, you know, what I thought was the reality of what made Queen, Queen. And the difference, I think, for Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, is that, you know, Jeremy Allen White's performance tackles what feels like, by the end of the movie, a lot more negative than positive. But in order to make the album Nebraska, which, again, keeps it very contained about how much of his career we follow, I feel like I come out of it like wanting to root for the boss. And, again, like, listen to the man's music. We all want to root for the boss. The boss is clearly, in many ways, rooting for us, even if we're not doing it ourselves. So I do think that this film works. I feel like it's not, you know, in a total package the way I would have preferred. However, you have a very commanding leading performance that is so hard to ignore. Yeah. I do think people will be talking about this. And, you know, for Jeremy Allen White, this is a huge leap because, yes, he's been in films, but we know him as a real TV star and an actor's actor. And for most of his film work, he's not the primary lead on a bigger, and this film is certainly on a bigger stage. I mean, this is one of the, you know, the top releases of this weekend. And it's still, like, actual box office totals are not in yet. It's hard to tell how the movie did. But to be honest, like, I was sitting in a mixed crowd of ages yesterday watching this, and I thought, I'm pretty sure this movie is clicking with people on the whole. It's just, it's imperfect. And maybe that was the point. So, you know, coming out of seeing it, I'm very strong on the leading performance, which alone for me is worth buying a ticket for.
Well, that was like,
and his singing is excellent. So there's that to be contended with as well, you know, when you think about it.
2,500 words there about Blake Stubbs on your review. The 312 only needed 3 words for their review. Movie was terrible.
Whoa, boy. Everybody's harsh. I will tell you this. There are people who downright hate this movie. That is not lost on me. But again, keep in mind, I was born in 1985. And what I understand about Bruce Springsteen, the man himself, I could probably fit in my pinky. Now, his music I grew up with. I grew up hearing it. But for the sake of providing a very interpersonal look at the man writing one of his most personal albums, I think this film gets quite a few things right. It just doesn't deliver in the end. That's okay. The problem.
A House of Dynamite on Netflix now. What's this all about?
So House of Dynamite, this is more of a preview than a review. I have not had a chance to see this yet, but this is Kathryn Bigelow, you know, one of 3 women to ever win Best Director at the Oscars. She won that for The Hurt Locker. She also directed Zero Dark Thirty, so now you have some context. And Point Break, let's be honest. You got to mention Point Break if you're going to mention Kathryn Bigelow. This is a new film from Netflix released on the platform, so you might be able to find a screening here or there somewhere. But it centers on a nuclear crisis where a missile has been fired at the United States, and we're trying to figure out who fired it, who's responsible, and how do we respond. This is one of those movies that's meant to be like a intense, I don't want to say political thriller, but like a potential world-ending thriller that has a completely stacked cast. Idris Elba, Rebecca Ferguson, Jared Harris, the great playwright Tracy Letts is featured in the film as well, another favorite son of Chicago. And this is one of those movies that Netflix, I think, is banking on maybe trying to throw out some Oscar money towards because of namely the director, the cast, et cetera. But it's just one of those, you know, high profile, probably thriller films that you could throw on. The problem is for me, again, when you make movies like this, stop just throwing them out on the streaming platform. Put them in a theater. Get people a chance to see this stuff on the big screen, because I think thrillers like this, that's where they really click. But you can watch this right now at home if you just open up Netflix on your television.
A House of Dynamite. Okay. Got about a minute and a half left, Blake. You've already come out with your movie of the year here in October. You think nothing can top it yet?
Well, right now where I'm sitting, One Battle After Another is the movie of the year for me. I've seen it several times. I think that if you're not familiar with it, do a little reading up, but don't spoil it for yourself. I mean, it's about revolutionaries versus, you know, a system that is corrupt and coming after them. And you kind of find yourself laughing and maybe a little crying throughout the whole thing. It's 2 hours and 41 minutes of what I thought is unrelenting filmmaking from Paul Thomas Anderson.
And what's it about, just generally speaking again?
Generally speaking, it's about a group of revolutionaries who, you know, do some bad stuff. And then they kind of go into hiding. And years later, their biggest enemy resurfaces and chases them unrelentingly. And so you have a movie that has chase scenes, action, comedy, drama, commanding performances from everyone involved. Leonardo DiCaprio, Sean Penn, an incredible performance from Benicio del Toro, and a great debut from the actress Chase Infinity, who I believe is a Columbia College graduate. So, yeah, this is one of those movies where it's still in theaters. It's been out for a while. But if you're looking for something to see that you and you have no idea what this movie's about, do just a little bit of reading, but don't spoil, and go see One Battle After Another.
That's Blockbuster Blake Stubbs with some highlights for y'all. And, Blake, have a good one. And it was fun celebrating Blake's 40th birthday last week. We were down in Champaign. Good times, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. You guys have a great one.
Our Entertainment Theater Report, sponsored by the Lyric Opera of Chicago. Let's take a break, and don't worry, I have not forgotten. Andy Mazur is going to remind me just to make sure I get it. I've got an egg casserole recipe for you that I swear is easy. You're going to love it, and anyone can make this thing. Next, Joffre Dean on WGN. 10:50 on WGN. Yeah, next week, the 2nd, at Tree Time, Dean will be there. And, in fact, he's there right now. He's there for the full week beforehand. Guys, I have a report from Dean. He's checked all the bulbs. They're all working on all the trees. That was a lot of trees to check. But you're right now, Shwani. He is now going through their bins to untangle the tinsel, which, you know, at your own house can take a long time. But imagine, just imagine doing that as well, trying to do all the tinsel for all of Tree Time Christmas Creations. That'll be a lot of fun. Look forward to that. I know Shwani will be there. I think Andy Mazur might be able to show up as well. He has to be oftentimes three places at once, but usually Andy Mazur are able to figure things out. In fact, he'll be hosting with Hamp and OB coming up next at 11 o'clock. Okay, is everyone ready here for my egg casserole recipe? Yes, they say. A chorus of yeses across the land. I haven't done this one for a couple years, but in the last couple weeks, I've now done it twice because it is spectacularly easy. Not all that many ingredients, but you can always add more. It's kind of like a one-size-fits-all egg casserole. And again, to all the like real cooks out there that are going to be like, egg casserole, anyone can do that. Yeah, well, I'm anybody. That's about my limitations. I can cook some things, but it's pretty much the basics. But what I like about this one is how quick and easy it is. And it all starts with sausage, of course the eggs, and we'll talk about the other ingredients. But a good egg casserole, I feel like, needs a good meat. And for me, I go with some Jimmy Dean sausages. So you get 2 pounds of that. And here's my little trick. Is I get one regular Jimmy Dean sausage, and I get one sage. If you're a grocery store, my Jewel here at 63rd and Main and Downers has it. They have sage Jimmy Deans. And I feel like that just gives it a little bit more of a savory taste to it. And you're not going to have to over then spice. You're not going to have to add a bunch of spices to your egg casserole. That is going to take care of a lot of the flavor that you're going to want out of this thing. So a pound of the regular, a pound of the sage. But if you want it hot, you can get hot sausage, all these sorts of permutations that you can make. And that's what you're going to do first. You're actually going to brown the sausage up, right? They come in the big logs and you mash it until it gets nice and small. You do not have to cook the sausage all the way through. In fact, I leave it a little pink because it's going to cook again when you put it in the casserole and put it in the oven. But get it nice and brown. You give it a head start and you do those 2 pounds of sausages and you set that off to the side. Now, while the sausage is slowly cooking, what you can do is you just get 12 eggs, which I love. Nice round number. 1 carton of eggs. Crack those on up. Then you just do a little milk. I mean, you can, if you want to measure 1/4 cup, go ahead, but just splash a little milk in there. What I think really pulls this one together is you do like 1 cup of sour cream. Again, I wouldn't even measure this thing. You can get one of the 8-ounce sour creams. That's what I do, so I just know the exact amount. Or if you got some sour cream, I don't know, splodge a little. Splodge isn't a verb, I don't know, but I feel like that it's appropriate for sour cream. You splodge some sour cream into the bowl. So you get the eggs, you get the sour cream, a little splash of milk, some pepper, some salt, and then add about, I don't know, a bag of shredded cheddar cheese or so. 2 cups, I think, is the official recipe. But yeah, a bag of it, right? A little handful of cheese. You drop that on in there. You mix this all up. It's kind of gross looking, I'm not going to lie. And then you actually put the sausage in there as well. And just be careful. I would let the sausage cool a little bit because it kind of starts to cook the egg if you throw it in there hot. So you're going to mix that all together. So we got the eggs, we got the cheese, we got the sour cream, the milk. Now we've got the half-cooked sausage, I'd say. And at this point is where you could kind of go off script a little bit, which is what I like to do. In the leftover oil that the sausage is left in the pan, I slice up thinly just some red potatoes, like 3 or 4 red potatoes, and I slice thin little layers of red potato, and I just kind of cook it on the pan a little bit. If you do potatoes and you just put it in the oven with the rest of the egg casserole, I don't think it's going to cook all the way through. It's just going to come out a little underdone. So I give it a head start on the pan where I cooked the sausage. This is where you could also put some onions, some red pepper, some green pepper if the people in your family are okay with that. That does not fly in my house, so we don't do that. But or you can do all sorts of things, whatever you want in there. But I do the potatoes. And then what I do is that bowl of the mixture of stuff that I mentioned, the eggs and all that stuff, you put it in a 9x13 glass pan, pour it all in there. You don't have to pre-oil it or anything like that. It's got enough oil in it already, trust me. And then I layer the sliced potatoes on the top, right? You've already cooked them a little bit. They're not cooked all the way through, but they've got a little bit of the flavor that sage sausage left behind on the pan, and it's browned a little bit on the potato. Don't overdo it. But then I kind of layer it on the top, like a top potato layer. And then you pop that thing. And by the way, I should have mentioned you're preheating the oven the whole time at 350. Pop it in the oven for 50 minutes, 5-0. Let that thing cook. It's ready to go. It couldn't be any easier. Let it cool a little bit so that when you cut it up with the spatula, it gives you nice clean cuts and it isn't mixing all together. If it's a little wobbly in the middle, you could leave it in there for another few minutes, or it's honestly going to cook a little bit more even after you pull it out of the oven. It is so simple. It's so good. And again, that sage flavored sausage, I'm sure there's other sorts of flavors like maple syrup if that's your cup of tea, do that. But those flavorings in those sausage make it so good. I'm going to post it. I still have not posted the Danish recipe. I promised I would. So I'll post two of those today on my Facebook page if you want to take a look. I know Dean has way cooler recipes that are way more fancy, but I thought this was just like a real nice fall treat. That's the John Hansen egg casserole dish, which I got in. Checked it off the list. Okay, hey, that's going to do it. A short show today, but we got some entertainment. We got some Schwanny. We got some Mazer and some recipes, too. So it was a lot of fun filling in for Dean. Thank you all for listening. Hamp and OB is coming up next. We'll do that after news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, which comes after this break on 720 WGN.